When I look in the mirror, I don't see wrinkles. When I look in the mirror, I see hair on my head, not my shoulder.
And hello, hello, hello. This is Adrienne Berg, and this is Generation Bowl, the fountain of truth. Now, you might say it's the fountain of truth about aging because that makes a very, very nice little messaging package. But it really isn't. It's the fountain of truth about life. And we do so many things on this show, from health to wealth to leisure to your own life purpose. But I'm not so sure we have ever had a guest that really was such a Renaissance person. From outer space to inner space, Esther Dyson has something to say about it and also does something about it. She is, of course, a journalist. She's a philanthropist. She's an investor. But mostly, I would say that she is a connoisseur of the scene. She looks to see what will really work and tries to make it happen. And that's not easy. We're going to be talking about things like precision medicine, equity in healthcare, and also in longevity. How you get people together to really make a move, and what might be the hardest, how do you get government officials together to make a change in their community? So Esther, thank you so much for being with us today.
It's a pleasure. Sorry about the sirens in the background.
Yeah, well, that's radio and that's live to tape, guys. That's live to tape. Okay, so I want to talk about Wellville. First of all, you know, when you say even the word Wellville, it conjures up a kind of utopia where everybody's happy, healthy, and wise. But what you mean by Wellville is creating communities, and it's not easy work. This is a 10-year nonprofit you've been devoted to. Every time you do something, you could have led with that on your bio, your resume, your Wikipedia. But when you read about Esther Dyson, the first thing it says is Wellville. Tell us a little bit about it and how it all began, a little history.
Okay, so Wellville is my full-time job, which is why it's up front on my bio.
Yep.
And I created it as HICCOP, which stands for Health Initiative Coordinating Council, with up at the end, kind of like meetup, which I thought was very clever. And I wanted it to be not fancy. I wanted it not to have my name in it and so forth. But the basic idea was to do, instead of an X Prize for healthcare, do something closer to an X Prize for health. And it morphed quite a bit, but the overall idea was 5 communities, 5 years, 5 metrics. And because I spent a lot of time in Silicon Valley, I knew that people often destroy the things they love by being, they don't get enough feedback. They don't listen to anybody. They own it and they destroy it. So I hired a CEO. I have a tech background. I was a journalist, science, et cetera. Rick was doing public health work for Cigna. So he came in with the institutional healthcare knowledge, the same kind of passion for health and equity, but a very, very different. You know, he had a day job, a family, whatever. I was pretty much just an angel investor with no particular focus, and this became my focus. The first thing Rick did after I heard him was to say, you know, this name HICCOP, I'm not sure.
Uh-huh. Right.
And I said, find something better. So he came up with the name of Wellville, bless him. And that's the kind of relationship we have. So I funded the thing and he's the paid executive director. I'm the executive founder, which means I'm the founder and I work, but I'm basically a team member, and the community I work with is Muskegon. There are 4 other communities: Clatsop County, Oregon, Muskegon's in Michigan, Lake County, California, North Hartford, Connecticut, which is Rick's county, and Spartanburg, South Carolina.
So I have to ask how you selected those.
Yeah.
Because what we're looking for here is the five metrics that you're measuring these communities.
Oh, but before we get changed. To that,
it's
now 10 years. So Rick was very helpful in writing sort of an application form, and then he knew exactly whom to send it to get quite broad distribution. And this wasn't simply write us a letter. This was fill in pages and pages of data and information about your community and your demographics and your health metrics and what your problems are and what you want to do and what you want to have help with. And you should be a cross-sector nonprofit collaborative to apply. And to our absolute amazement, we got 42 applications.
Wow.
We read them. And what we were looking for was not the best five communities. We wanted the best group of five to learn, to have geographic diversity, institutional diversity. Just, you don't learn a lot by looking at two apples. You don't learn a lot more about fruit by looking at one apple and one orange and then maybe a grapefruit and a, I don't know, a
pomegranate. So you were looking for diversity among the communities themselves.
Right.
To and making a selection.
Yeah. And we wanted also communities where we thought we could help. I mean, there's some where there just didn't seem to be enough of a focus or an understanding of their issues, blah, blah, blah. But we picked 10 to go visit the summer of 2014. And honestly, pretty much with the exception of during college in some ironic way, my life has been, I'm a serial learner as opposed to a serial entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. And this is one of the all-time great learning summers, as you can imagine, visiting 10 communities around the U.S. We actually, if you like, quote, the best community was Columbus, Indiana, which is was basically the company town of Cummins Engine. And they were so good, we kind of felt,
they don't need you.
They don't need us. Right. And we didn't want to go in and claim credit. And ironically, one of the people who made Columbus such a great place, I mean, aside from Cummins really leaning in, was a guy called Dexter Cherney, who I'm actually talking with this afternoon because he now works for the Blue Zones Institute for Adventist Health. So small world. But that said, so we wanted ones from all over, et cetera, et cetera. And the next big thing that happened was the five that we selected, we had a meeting in Tampa with Oliver Wyman, who have the Oliver Wyman Health Initiative or Health Innovation Coalition or something like that. So they were kind enough to invite us to their conference, and we were a bit late to the game, so we had to stay in a secondary hotel that happened to be the hotel Obama stayed in when at the last minute he came to Tampa to go visit a military base. So it was kind of cool to have Obama come through a hotel
right,
from time to time.
There. Now, I do want to ask you something in terms of Blue Zones, because you said a magic word. With regard to these communities, we know about Blue Zones here, and my audience knows it very well.
Yes.
They've read the books and so on. In fact, I live near one, Loma Linda. But the fact is that, is that what you were trying to create, Blue Zones, meaning a healthier environment, or did you have a different focus for these five?
We wanted, so definitely our thesis was it's the environment and the social fabric, not the healthcare system that makes for a healthy community. But our business model is different from Blue Zones. And I mean, the Blue Zones people are great. And one of the people I learned a lot from was Susan Burden, who did the Blue Zones in the kind of the coastal communities of LA. It's called the Beach Cities District or something like that. She was wonderful and very helpful. But that's kind of different because Blue Zones gets hired by somebody, pays them a lot of money, and or some money, and then they go around and work with restaurants and so forth. So our mission is neither to get paid nor to fund community organizations, but to help the community build their own organizations and make them more sustainable, more long-term thinking. It's kind of like we're not sending them fish. We're not even teaching them to fish. We're really helping them to build their own fishing schools so that they can create and train the next generation of people to help build a community where there's a support system, there's a strong social fabric. Some of this will be government funded, and a lot more of it should be government funded. But in the end, our message in a sense is, you can do this. You just need to start thinking long term. You need to collaborate. And by the way, get the people who do fund you, get them to fund collaborations rather than make everybody compete for a small pot of money. So in essence, we're coaches. It's like the football team. The team wins. The team owns the ball. You know, they thank the coach, but the coach doesn't own the game, and the team does.
So you put front and center, and this is a really big breakthrough. You're putting front and center the people as opposed to the process only and yes. What you're bringing there. So when we come back, I want to talk about this a little bit because everybody has to understand that healthcare is in your hands. That a good 90% of what you do, what you eat, how you exercise, who you know, your ideas about living affect your longevity and how healthy that longevity will be. So this is such and this is a package. And it is very difficult. Very few people are the thinkers in this field. There's a lot of doers, not that many thinkers. Esther Dyson is one of the thinkers. And to create these breakthroughs in real life for real people is almost magical. It's easy to write a book about it. It's not so easy to see some change. When we come back, Esther, I wanted to talk to you about the one thing that I see as the big barrier, and that's our own personal behaviors and how Wellville, coming from, let's say, up high or the community, has impacted individuals so that your statistics, because you're an AI person, you're a data gatherer par excellence, shows whether or not people individually have taken to this and it makes it easier for them to make a difference in their own lives. We will discuss that. We will be back in just a moment. Don't you go anywhere. It's the pivotal question.
All of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, because I am happy and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da-da-da-da. You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, because I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age.
And hello, hello, hello. This is Adrian Berg, and this is Generation Bold, the Fountain of Truth. And we're digging deeply into the thinking of a thinker. Well, you know, we have a phrase that's thrown around all the time. Thought leadership. What do you do for a living? I'm a thought leader. Well, here's a real thought leader. Her name is Esther Dyson, and you may not know her, and I really think you must. Executive founder of Wellville. Now, this is a group of five communities. It's a 10-year project already. But during those 10 years, Esther has been part of so many nonprofits, Charity Navigator, Expanded Schools. We'll have this on our website. Look at these places. They're very 23andMe, one of the original investors in 23andMe. She's all a part of the Genome Project. Also, she's prepared to go to outer space. We'll talk about that very soon. And precision medicine. So this is a person who could do anything she wanted to do and decided that it was time to see whether or not you could rebuild a community or infuse a community with better health for all. So my question, Esther, and you know that I'm very interested in personal behaviors. How did this filter down? Do you have the data, the information, where the diabetes are less, where the people exercise more? I don't even know how you're measuring this. Yeah. I'm interested to know.
So we collect data, but we're not sort of a data-driven experiment. And we're also not, you know, going into the community and telling people how to behave better. What we're trying to do much more fundamentally is change the fabric of the community or help the community change its own fabric, if you like, and enrich it and collaborate on what matters to them. They care about health. I think most of all, they care about the health and especially the mental health of their children, because that's what inspires people to do things with great purpose. It's thinking long term, and it's thinking about the community as a whole, including people of different races, the poor people. It's not, you know, if we went into a community and we helped the upper half of the demographic become dramatically healthier, we would consider that a failure. We're really trying to reduce the disparity. We're trying to make the community feel more like a community. And we're not walking around in the streets doing that ourselves. We're helping basically the people in the community who are good at doing this. We're helping them get better because the people who succeed are more willing to share and collaborate. The people who are struggling, you know, we want to help them by having them be helped. But in terms of where we're working, we're trying to work with the community organizations that are able to make an impact and collaborate on doing so.
So you're going the strength to strength. You know, this reminds me a little bit of one of my favorite guests, and maybe she's an idol of mine. I embarrass her a lot. And that's Monique Sternin, who is over at Tufts, but she was the original founder with her husband of the concept of positive deviance. Mm-hmm. If things aren't working, go to the one or two people or the one or two organizations where it is working and stop concentrating on fixing what isn't working. Go to the people who fixed it already.
Yes.
And work with them and support them and give them the money or the tools or whatever they need so that they then become almost like infectious. Their positive deviance, meaning that everybody's doing it failure and they are positive in being different, starts to spread. And I think that's part of this concept. Now, let me go to the jugular here again. I always ask every guest, what would you like people to know? If you were finished with the show and you would feel disappointed that you didn't get to say it. And I'm asking the same of you, and wait till you hear this, because most people give me some kind of a practical comment. Listen to the philosophy behind Esther Dyson's thinking. So what do you want people to know that they should take away for themselves?
Fundamentally, I'll tell a story. We, like everybody, so I funded this thing myself. I got lucky in the stock market, but we applied for the MacArthur $100 million and change grant. Mm-hmm. Because if we had $100 million, then we could have an amazing prize. We could spend money on doing some useful things and so forth. And the hardest question was, why is your team so special? What is it? Why do you deserve $100 million? And frankly, if this idea depended on our team, it would be completely unscalable. We want to help these communities be role models for other communities. But the basic message is not, you need Wellville to come and fix you. The basic message is, look at the people in Muskegon and Clatsop County. And these are not the world's most amazing people. They don't have huge resources, but they managed to change the community for the better. And you can do that too. It doesn't require huge amounts of outside capital or consultants and so forth and so on. So in essence, we want our community to be role models for the rest of the country. And we do also want to say, by the way, they deserve more money to help fund their schools. They deserve more money to provide a lot of affordances for the community. But fundamentally, local people can do amazing stuff if they start to collaborate and work together and think long-term and across racially economic divides and help the next generation become more resilient. And I mean, one thing worth noting, we're really focused, not entirely, because we're focused in essence where the community is focused, but a lot of what makes a community successful is children who are resilient, who have an education, who are not damaged by the time they get to grade school. And in so many poor communities around the U.S., that's not the case.
You know, Esther, when I talk about this a lot, I take a lot of lifelong learning courses. I'm pretty much up on what's going on in the boomer community and what we're listening to. Hillary Clinton was asked to create a masterclass, and she could have done that on politics or history or anything else. Mm-hmm. And her masterclass is on resilience. One of the things that I do talk about a lot is the death of my father when I was young. And it created for me a shmoo doll. I was like a shmoo doll. If anybody remembers that, you would knock this thing down. It was made of plastic and it would come right back up again. Anytime you knocked him down, it came right back up. That's what I consider resilience, and it is so important to be taught. You shouldn't have to lose a father or be hungry or be scrappy or watch illness to become resilient. It is something that can actually be taught, and we teach it at my great charity, Good Grief, for kids who did lose their parents early. But resilience can be taught and it can be learned. This is something we rarely ever talk about as a bonus in aging, that resilience. You need it more as you age than almost any other time in your life. But I do have to ask you one other thing about your philosophy. Every time you send me an email, it says, make new mistakes. What is that about? Make new mistakes.
Okay,
what does that represent to you?
It's always make new mistakes.
Always.
Because that's how you learn. Don't make the same old mistakes. It could be always make only new mistakes. But the basic idea is don't be afraid to try stuff. But don't try and fail doing the same thing again and again. So it's encouragement to give things a whirl. Like, you know, doing Wellville itself. There wasn't, I mean, sure, people have started things, but no one was doing that. And I thought, you know, this is what I really want to do. And
yes,
we've made a bunch of mistakes along the way, but we've learned a ton. And in essence, what we want to do is share our learning so that people don't need to repeat our mistakes. They can go make new ones of their own. And ideally, learn from them and do a couple of things right as well.
Yes, well, that's a very scientific attitude, too. Experiment. The more mistakes you make, the more you've learned. And when we come back, we're going to talk about something a little bit more scientific, precision medicine and AI, and something called Tracker that I want you to know about, because this is the new face in the future, I think, of diagnosis and also care. And who's in the middle of all this? Esther Dyson. Who else? Don't you guys go anywhere.
Bother me not even a bit, cause I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da 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 da, da 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 da. You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me not even a bit, cause I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age.
Hello, hello, hello. This is Adrienne Berg, and this is Generation Bold, the Fountain of Truth, the Fountain of Truth about aging. And what we're going to be doing right now is giving you a little bit of housekeeping before we go back to our guest. So there is a new book out. It is called The Retirement Income Explosion. It's very easy to purchase on Amazon by Kindle or hard copy, or if you want paperback, or go to our website. We have a lot of interesting material for the book, retirementincomeexplosion.com. Of course, what are we doing about it? We are acknowledging that we are going to be living longer. We're already living longer, but not necessarily better. My joke is, you're going to live longer. That's the good news. You can't afford it. That's the bad news. So we have to be able to do so. And there has been new legislation called the Secure Act, which we unpack in that book and on the website, that allows you to work longer. It's an acknowledgement of our longevity. And it's also an acknowledgement that we want to work and we're capable of doing it. So it's actually a tax law. There's also a new calculation for your requirement distribution from your retirement and how to increase your income for the rest of your life so you don't have that longevity gap. So that's the Retirement Income Explosion, and it is written just for you. All right, so let's get back to Esther. We're speaking with Esther Dyson, and she is the executive founder of Wellville. I'm going to ask for a website, too, because I enjoy going to the Wellville website. So let's start with that before we talk a little bit about precision medicine and another endeavor of yours. Just tell us how to find Wellville if we want to read more about that program.
Very well, very easily, wellville.net.
That's it, wellville.net. Now, when I was looking at your bio, and I knew how many different types of things that you have been involved in, including 23andMe, which is something that many of the listeners know about. We'll talk about outer space in a minute. But one that really attracted me was the concept of precision medicine, a company called Banff Health, using much less invasive ways to diagnose, to deliver medications, And that is something that you certainly support. But if you could explain to people, what was the attraction there? I mean, there's ultrasound, which delivers a precision medicine and people with cancer, Alzheimer's, and so on. But this is something very attractive to you, and you're usually right on the money. So tell us a little bit about that and your involvement.
Okay. Well, I mean, precision medicine to me is a very, very broad topic. It simply means different things for different people, depending on everything from their genetics to all kinds of other specific issues. Banff is actually a radiopharmaceutical company, and certainly it's precise, but so are most treatments for specific diseases or conditions. What it does, it's so we're in the middle of FDA approval and so forth and so on, but it basically, if you know how a PET scan works, where you tag a substance in a PET scan, it's sugar, because your body your cancer metabolizes the sugar. It uses that same idea, and it sticks very short. So that's the diagnosis part. And then for the actual treatment, basically it's radiation treatment, but it's very localized, because you put the radioactive pharmaceuticals also into that same thing that metabolism takes it to the cancer. And then the cancer gets irradiated, and eventually the substance, it has a short half-life, so it deteriorates and it stops being radioactive and you excrete it. But it's very complicated to actually do that, because of course it is radioactive substances. You don't want them floating around all over the place, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So in addition to just the radiopharmaceuticals, Banff is building a facility. Initially, the first one's in Grand Rapids, and then there will be other ones around the country with various partners to do that treatment. The treatment is not yet approved in the U.S. I need to say that very carefully.
Yes.
But they do have a partner in Germany that has actually saved the lives of many people they've sent over, including one of the big investors in the company. And, I got to know the company ironically through Wellville, because the chairman of the company is Roger Spolman, who was also the chairman of Mercy, the healthcare system in Muskegon.
Uh-huh.
And so it's now another thing that ties me to Western Michigan. I think they're going to be amazing. They're starting with prostate cancer, and they've done an amazing job so far. And we're close to being ready to start treating patients in the U.S. sometime later this year, I hope.
You know, Esther Dyson is I'll call her an early responder. She's an early responder to things that generally do work and then become more or less mainstream eventually. Who doesn't know 23andMe or the Genome Project and so on? We all know that. These are things that are now in our vocabulary, but sounded like science fiction when they began. So I am particularly interested in this because in addition to this company, I think this is the way healthcare is going to go. It looks a little Star Trek-y, but the fact is that diagnoses can be made without invasion. Delivery of precision drugs of this pharmacopoeia, like radiation, can be delivered without it being throughout your whole body, without all the horrible effects. And there are a few ways of doing it, but just like any other science, when one group has a breakthrough, it tends to be a breakthrough for many. And watch for this, because this is going to be the way to better health for people who do have issues that they have to deal with. I think that's very important. But for a little fun topic, so you were suited up. I have seen you in pictures suited up as a space to go into outer space. Now, that's another thing that you've been involved with. Tell us a little bit about that.
Okay, so I trained as a cosmonaut in Russia and then spent a few weeks in Baikonur, Kazakhstan. I was a backup to Charles Simony, who's one of the, I think, seven space tourists that actually went to the space station and stayed there for a while, as opposed to most of the guys going up right now are basically going up for a few minutes, hanging out, in quote space, but they're not actually living there or getting, My goal ultimately is to have it be boring to be weightless. And so, you know, if you stay up there for a week, you get over all the nausea and you get, it just feels familiar. So I have not yet experienced that. I've been weightless a bunch of times and I've been through the training. So interestingly, when I watch a space movie, my first reaction is, oh yeah, I was there. Oh no, right. No, I only trained. It's like the simulations are really good. And of course that's the purpose, to make you feel that it's totally familiar. But I have not yet been on the space station or anything else. It was interesting. I learned a lot about space plumbing and space medicine and also about the Soviet society, because even though this was 2008 to 2009, it was still pretty much a government. The Yuri Gagarin Yes. Cosmonaut Training Center was a government facility.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, in 1974, when I went to Russia for the first time, and this was the real heart of Yes. communism, real heart of it. And it was very hard to breathe. I found some issues, respiratory issues, because it was personal. Because it was
in
so,
Moscow or where?
It was so, yes, Moscow, Leningrad, and so on. It was so controlled that it actually affected me physically. That's why I believe in the mind-body. But the fact is that you were watched every minute. There was really nothing that you could do, particularly as a U.S. tourist, that would opened up a view. So my view was very closed. Since then, things have changed enormously, enormously. But I could understand that if you were dealing with a space program in Russia, even by 2008, 2009, there were secrets to be kept. So my last question for you on this one, do you go back and train to continue the physical experience of being weightless so that you can get to that point where don't mind it? Yeah,
it's not. It's like adjusting to the altitude. If you spend a week in Aspen or in the Himalayas, but you can't. You know, you don't need to go back every year. It's more like each time you readjust.
You start from scratch,
so,
right?
Yeah. And, so I'm hoping to retire on Mars. You know, when everything's done. But right
well,
now,
I'll
I'm
tell
too
you,
busy
you're
doing
the only
Wellville.
One. Yeah, I think everybody has to know that this is not Esther's thing alone. You may be reading that people who are millionaires, billionaires have already gone into space. You always see Branson running around doing that. And they're very serious about the possibility of, particularly because of environmental issues on this planet, actually retiring and living on another planet. And that is why, funny enough, space travel and longevity are handmaidens when it comes to investing funds, what they're looking at, who's involved. It tends to be the same people. Now, when we come back, we're going to turn our attention to something entirely different. And that is how Esther is working to bring people together and clubs together so that we're all much more related and can find that life purpose, that good friend, much easier. This is all one piece in Esther's mind, but it's also one piece in our lives. So don't you go anywhere.
Bother me not even a bit, cause I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da 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 da, da 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 da. You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me not even a bit, cause I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da da.
And hello, hello, hello. This is Adrian Berg, and this is Generation Bold, the Fountain of Truth, the Fountain of Truth about aging. Now, we talked a little bit about precision medicine, so I'll give you another hint and tip. If you go to Katalys, K-I-T-A-L-Y-S, .org, they are posting a webcast that took place this week with Dr. Snyder at Stanford University, also talking about your own biomarkers, how to understand the use of MRIs, Esther mentioned PET scans, so that you can have a non-invasive diagnosis, know where you're at, monitor your own body, and then what precision medicine can do for you. So take a look. You remember that wonderful nonprofit that's dedicated its mission to health equity and longevity equity for everyone. Just did a webcast with Dr. Snyder of Stanford, KITALYS.org. Now, getting back to Esther, before we go into some of these things that have to do with something fascinates me, which is you call it Element 3, and there's a website for that too. Give us the website for Wellville again. As you say, it's very easy. And a yes. little bit about its future, because you are so invested, not only financially, but in terms of your time in this terrific yes. project.
So first, I just want to mention, I actually work out of the offices of another company I'm invested in called Ezra.com, Ezra.com, which does MRIs also for diagnosis. Again, started with prostate cancer, and they do screenings, and they use AI to make the experience of the MRI somewhat better because it's usually long and loud, and they've made it shorter. They do, they improve the radiologist's accuracy and so forth and so on. So there's a lot going on in this field, and not only am I an investor, I use their offices. And
interestingly, thank you, Ezra. Thank you.
Yes. Interestingly, I had the same arrangement with Meetup for many years. Meetup, the company that does these yes. face-to-face meetings. And I was on their board. I worked out of their office. And that was lovely. Then they got acquired by WeWork. But Meetup has informed how and why I'm working with Element 3 Health. So for a long time, I didn't want to invest in Element 3 because basically, I felt they were somewhat competitive, and I just was awkward. But once Meetup was acquired and no longer had a board, I joined the board of Element 3, which is more focused on Medicare patients. Its business model is different from Meetup's. It basically, it helps health insurance companies with Medicare Advantage sign their patients up for local clubs that create that same community fabric that I talked about with Wellville, that we had with Meetup. And it's something in particular that older people often miss because they tend to live at home and they don't go to work every day. So joining a club is one of the better things they can do. And what both Meetup and Element 3 did or do is help make those clubs better and help people find the clubs and then create friendships. And I always used to love to say, it's not the political Democrats club or the Republicans club. It's the chess club where the Republicans and the Democrats play chess together and realize
right.
that, hey, he may be a Republican, but he plays a mean game of chess.
Exactly.
And so forth.
And brings people together. So let's understand that if you go to an over 55 community, and I am not the biggest fan of them, one of the attractions is that you're getting built-in friends. Most of the time, it doesn't work because that's not the way people relate to each other just because they happen to be in the same place at the same time. There's affinity. And what Element 3 does is it takes people and gives, just like Meetup, the opportunity to join an affinity group that tickles them, that engages them. So that they do stay active, because we know engagement, activity, lifelong learning is all part of longevity. It's one of the biggest parts of longevity, but not if you're isolated. And it isn't so easy, even in an environment. And I've studied, Esther, over 55 communities, gated communities, mm-hmm. active leisure communities till I'm blue zones. And I can tell you that there are plenty of isolated people.
I know. My mother was one.
Yeah. Who could walk out the door and play bridge or bingo or anything they wanted and don't. What I've studied is the use of the positive deviant in that environment, the person who does engage, and how they can be an ambassador to the other ones in the community using this idea of positive deviance with activity directors. So when I see something like that, don't be surprised that I jump on to something like Element 3. Mm-hmm. Now you know why that fascinated me, of all the things that many things you're involved with. Before we go, please take a look at that. If you're in an organization that wants to attract the mature older adult, if you're a payer, as Esther says, and you are in the Medicare field, the healthier we are, the cheaper it is for you guys. So keep us healthy, keep us organized and engaged. Now, Esther, Wellville, going back so that we conclude where we started.
Right.
What is the future now? You've got 10 years into the project. What's next?
So we're 7 years into the project. It was from 2015 to the end of 2024. And we're getting into that phase where we now are beginning to think more, you know, getting on podcasts and talking about how it works. But our goal ultimately, the community's goal is to become better places to live and to raise kids and to build a future. And our goal is to use their example to inspire other communities and ultimately to inspire voters and politicians and institutions to help make this kind of thing happen more broadly. So we're starting to talk to documentary makers and journalists and so forth and so on. We're still working intensely with the communities. It takes a long time to do this kind of work and to get people's trust and to make things happen. And of course, in some ways, COVID-19 really disrupted everything, but in some ways that disruption is good because it makes it easier to change positively. And you know, after 2024, I think a couple of us will still be working on getting that message out more broadly. We're not sure yet in what way. You know, we'd love to have a book or two. We'd love to have some of the community leaders are people who can go out and give speeches and talk on podcasts or maybe move to other communities. Some will stay at home and enjoy the communities they've helped build and engage. But it's kind of like parents. You know, you got to raise your kids and you got to raise them to be the best thing they can be, not what you want them to be. But then you need to let go.
Yes.
And so we're not trying to do another 10 years. We're not trying to expand to other communities. We're trying to help people copy us. And earlier this week, I was in Chattanooga, where there's a new community foundation. Just got $100 million from the sale of a hospital. Telling them what we're doing in Wellville so that they can do it.
Yes.
Or learn from our mistakes, as I said earlier.
Now, the other thing that fascinates me about this, getting the word out, becoming a model, and creating a model that's followable, and even an institution that helps people follow the Wellville model in training, perhaps even in schools of public policy. Just did a moderation at the Columbia School of the Mailman School of Public Policy.
Right.
These tend to be some of the things that really make a difference because people begin to have that in their training curriculums when they're training to be leaders in these kinds of fields. So that's another possibility. And then it becomes what people can really do and make happen. And I'll just mention it and be finished with this. I'm also looking at brand new communities being built, mostly in other countries. But we have a lot of land here, too, and we have a lot of private builders. And they're struggling. They're looking to create something that distinguishes their community, a built community, from other communities. And what Wellville could do could be part of that as well for forward-thinking developers. And I just think that to even know you, Esther, and to know the way you think and approach what you feel is worthwhile doing is an inspiration by itself. I'm planning to make some new mistakes after meeting you.
I'm glad to hear that. That's great. Thank you.
So thank you so much. And you know our motto. It's get out there, kids, and make it happen.
I'm inappropriate.